You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday afternoon, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro, who's the Deputy Chairman of Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. Lovely start to the week, David. The US futures coming out of the blocks because of some politically motivated plasma cure that has been trumpeted by Mr. Trump last night, and then everyone grabbed onto that. And of course, the line of least resistance is to the upside at the moment in the US stock markets. So up they went. The Far East was doing very well as well, and the JSE has followed it. So a lovely day.
It is. Look, I'm not buying the vaccine yet.
No,
the vaccine will come, but it's some time away. In fact, if you go into what Trump originally wanted, he wanted the vaccine that AstraZeneca and Oxford University are making, you know, to be released immediately. Mm. And the FDA have come and said, you do that, we resign, you know, and I mean senior executives, because it compromises their position that they can be politically motivated or influenced by politics to release something that hasn't gone through the usual test. So, you know, Trump hops onto something else. And grabs onto that. But I think whatever way we look at it, yes, we're getting closer to some kind of solution.
Yes.
And probably, you know, Lindsay, I still think we're 6 months to a year away from complete safety, or, you know, the confidence that we can get back to a normal life. I don't see it happening. Certainly not before the year end, and maybe even the first quarter of 2021. So I think that's, with that in sight, you know, that's where people or investors are focusing. And along the way, rates are going to remain low. And as long as rates remain low, as long as rates are in negative territory, I'm talking in a real terms,
yes,
the markets are going, you know, people are going to be prepared to pay up for earnings. And that's where we are. You've heard us, certainly Nick and myself, we've been cautious along here, just trying to work out why there is this momentum behind it. We've been bullish. You know, we're natural bulls. We're not going bear of the market, but I think that it's exceeded where we thought it would be. You know, far exceeded the levels that we would have thought that the market would have.
Even you, I mean, as natural bulls, yeah, you and Nick Kunze, and we'll speak in our three-way chat tomorrow evening, but even you two have probably been surprised by the ferocity and the rapidness, if that's a word, of the rally. And it just and that must make you feel a little bit, wait a second, this is a little bit too much. You've got Robin Hood, you've got the Fed, you've got Donald Trump. There's something not quite right here. It's been a little bit too quick. It's not wrong, but it's been too quick.
Well, it's too quick. The problem is that you try and look for the sell down, and there's no hint of anything that's going to topple it. Other than maybe it just fizzles out. You know, fizzles out means it gets too frothy, and people just say, okay, well, we're going to buy at a lower pace or not going to buy. But I think the counter to this, and this is where I have problems, is that where are people putting their money? If they're not going to put it into the equity market, I doubt whether they want to put it into the 10-year bond market or the bond market or credit markets, where I think the risks are probably higher than the equity market. So you've just got this trickle in of funds that are now starting to come into the equity market.
Yeah.
Are the valuations, bubble territory? Not really. They're very, very high, and they stretch. But I still think they can, you can get them going up a little bit more. But am I rushing in now? Am I telling people you've got to go in now? You know, now's the time. No, not at all. You know, and in fact, you know, Lindsay, just to explain it, yes, we've been going into the market, and I always trickle money in. I never, if someone gives me money, I don't just hit the market straight away. And then, so we've done it in tranches, and then other clients come back, and the question is, so when's the next tranche? You know,
yeah.
And I'm saying, well, let me wait. I'm not in any exciting mood, to buy Apple at these kind of levels or to buy Amazon at these levels or anything else. On the other hand, even though those shares that have been bombed out, I don't see them recovering. I understand what I'm saying? The value investment, yes, the opposite of where we are, because they're two markets. There's the at-home market, you know, which is the nice word that they use for people who are for the businesses that are benefiting from the lockdown. And then those that aren't, you know, those that have been hurt dramatically. I'm not ready to go into those yet.
It's an interesting one, David, because there's a friend of ours, a broadcasting friend of ours, who I speak to every week. He's of our ilk, our age. He's not as old as you, not quite as young as me, but you know. But he's has been saying for the last 3 to 4 months, I'm not going into the market. He's bullish. He's a natural bull, like you and Nick Kunz are. Yeah. He's a natural bull, but he hasn't been putting the money that he's got waiting in the wings for, on behalf of his clients into the market. And it's getting to the point now where I ask him every week, when are you going to break down? When are you going to say, I've been wrong. I thought the market would come back 10-15% after the bounce back. I mean, we don't need to go into percentages or anything, but when are you going to throw in the towel and buy? And when I look at the markets this morning, from the early hours of this morning, we're breaking through to record highs on the S&P, record highs on the NASDAQ futures, etc. I think to myself, if I was in his position, I would say, well, if I want to keep my job, I've really got to start deploying some of this cash. Do you know what I mean?
That's a danger. It's such a difficult position to be in, because you feel this pressure behind you. Instinctively, you follow. You've been on the market for many, many years. You know, you don't feel comfortable, and yet you've got this pressure behind you.
Yeah,
that's, you know, of people saying, you know, you've got to buy, you've got to become involved. It's a very difficult position. I just, I respect him if he just says, look, I'm going to fix my motor cars in the garage, or I'm going to, you know.
How did you know who I was talking about? No, we mustn't talk about a person behind their back.
No, it's a very difficult position.
It is a very, very difficult one.
Lindsay, to put it in perspective, I dread new clients coming to me with money at the moment, you know. Are you with me now, where they say, here, you know, I want to come to you, here's money. So, oh my God, why didn't you come a year ago or 18 months ago?
In 2009 or something.
That explains the difficulty that we are in at the moment, you know, when you get these kind of markets. You do like, you know, number one, you like to see numbers. You can't move away from the fundamentals. You know, you've got to look at the company. How's it doing? How is it going to be, you know, doing down the line 3 to 5 years? Where is it going to be? So those are the kind of tools we use. And at the moment, it's those tools are kind of at the top end of where we would have gone into the market. So, yeah, that explains it. But look, it's making us, those who've been in the market, it makes us look very, very good. I'm not in a position now to sell out. You know, I still think that I don't feel the pressure. That's the other side of it. I don't feel the downside pressure yet. Mm. I don't feel that people want to get out. Mm. And it's difficult to reconcile all of it. But we're just going to go through the next few months and see what it brings. I keep saying this to you. You can't drive on a GPS, boy. You can't use your satellite dish. You've got to drive every meter or every kilometer with your eyes, you know, fixed very, very carefully on the road. That's the kind of market we're in.
And the market we're in today is a good market, especially on the JSE. Well, including the JSE, rather. ABSA came out with its numbers today, came out with an appalling trading statement a week or so ago.
Yeah.
But today the market has said, well, we know about this. We knew about it a week ago. And so the share price up a couple of percent, 2.5%, whatever it is. But again, banks, don't touch them.
Why would you? Mm. You know, I really, when I look at the numbers, here you are, management is giving you a very strong message. It's saying, look, we've done okay. You know, we're getting in more deposits. We're making more loans. But we don't know whether we're going to get that money back. We've lent money. And to be honest, under the new rules and regulations, you've got to make a call on whether those clients are going to pay you back. And they're saying, well, not quite likely.
Mm.
So they know the profile of those businesses. And I'll tell you, I'll tell you something that – it's not only the construction workers or the restaurant, the waiters in the restaurant.
You're going to tell me this, doctors. This you're going to tell doctors. Me the professional story again, aren't you? The doctors and the lawyers, aren't
That's
you?
That's what I'm saying to you. Mm. Yeah, they're all being, you know, now they're some richer than others. but it's not across, you know, it's not, that's where the misperception is. So, oh no, don't worry, you know, it's more going to hit a Capitec than it would hit First Rand or something. I don't think so. And I think also those businesses as well, smaller and medium-sized businesses are being squeezed. And if you go through these results, you know, which I try to do religiously, you know, I just try to get a feel for how businesses are shaping up. Things are tough. And the write-offs, Lindsay, the impairments. And when do you, why do you impair an asset? You impair an asset because you're not getting a return on it. In other words, you know, you've bought an asset, as you know, as we've seen some businesses, and they, you know, they've got to write off. They've got to write off these businesses to real returns, to, you know, to the returns they're getting. So the amount of destruction to balance sheets has been enormous. Who went into Spain? Yeah, it was Bidcorp. Sorry. Bidcorp
6% down today, a trading statement, which is a big move for a big company. And obviously there's Bidvest and there's Bidcorp. They've split it up. If I drive around Rotterdam or Amsterdam, wherever I am, I see Bid food trucks all over the place. So they're obviously doing business, but not as much business as they were doing a year ago.
Well, of course. Do you know why? It's because they deliver to restaurants, they deliver to canteens. You know, that's what they do. They're a food services business, a logistics business, but logistics in the sense that that's, you know, every restaurant that you go to, you sit down there and there's a pack of sugar which has been, or the toothpicks which have come from Bidvest, or Bidcore, sorry, you know, that's what they do. Well, the cheeses come there and, you know, that's great business, but their business has been just absolutely ravaged by, you know, by the lockdown. I mean, it's all their customers. So not only have they had to, you know, not only have they lost in income, but they're also worried about, and here I'm coming to the same thing. They're not worried about, oh, we've lost business. They worry about, hold on a sec, are our debtors going to pay us? And that's what they've said. They've made they made 785 million rand provision against receivables, you know, people who owe them money. Those restaurants that owe them money might not pay, so they've had to make provisions against there as well. Then a lot of the – can you imagine if you had bought cheese or something like this? Now, well, I don't know. You know the cheese better than I do from there, but, I mean, can it go off? I'm sure that these foods, fresh foods, go off as well, you know, stuff that they do.
I don't eat cheese, I must admit. I don't eat cheese. Certainly not Dutch cheese. It's processed. It's yellow. Why do you think the Dutch are so tall? Because they eat so much blooming cheese. They really are. Let's talk about Old Mutual now. When I look at the insurance companies, I look at Sanlam, I look at Old Mutual, I look at Liberty and the others, and I think, God, I mean, if you were a young person, someone trading with Robin Hood or something, or someone who's just given David Shapiro a couple of million rand at Sasfin and said, right, I like you talking on the radio and on the TV every week. I want you to invest my money for me. You wouldn't put them into an insurance company, would you? It's so boring. It's not boring, but it's just a little bit pedestrian. Boring is the wrong word. Pedestrian.
I've never liked them. I've never liked insurance companies because of that very point. And that's how they make money. Where they've been attractive is that they generate lots of cash in bull markets. They charge fees to their clients. They charge performance fees and so on. And they make good money and they pay you good dividends. But I agree with you. They're very, very boring. You know, there's nothing there that grabs you. And that's why I can't get carried away about Quilter or Momentum or Mutual or Sundam or any of those financial services businesses.
Good companies, but on the other hand, as you say, the opportunity cost of being in them is not something that you should be embracing as a financial manager. Okay, let's have a look at something else as well. I talked about you this morning.
They would equal GDP. You know what I mean? Those companies equal GDP.
And GDP is zero in this country. Famous Brands has sold its controlling stake in your favorite place, Tashas. Now, this is like going short of the market. You go short of the market by selling to Famous Brands if you're the Tashas owners. The value of your company falls, and then you buy it back. So they went short, and they're buying back now. Is that the case?
Yeah, exactly right. There's all kinds of, you know, it was Hedewick who probably bought them.
He bought everything.
I didn't realize it was back. I didn't realize it was all the way back in 2008. I didn't think it was that far down, you know, far away. I thought it was much sooner. But anyway, so they've held it for a long time. Look, she's Natasha has expanded. You know, that stage when they bought her, she only had a couple of restaurants. So she's got quite a few now, and I'm surprised to see about 8 of them in the UAE. And so she had a very strong, good brand. And probably I don't think that a famous brand was able to perhaps provide what she did on a personal thing. She would walk around, boy, and if that minestrone wasn't good, she'd slap the cook. You know, those kind of CEOs. Not. I don't mean literally slap, but she had a standard. And when she walked around a restaurant, boy, you could see an operation. She was great. You know, I knew her from the very first one that she opened in Athol Square. She had one in Bedford View, but I don't think that was Tasha. First was Bedford View. I think it could have been under another name, but boy, and it was a wonderful place and became very popular. And then, of course, she moved to Melrose Arch and to other places, Santon, etc. But she had a wonderful menu and an incredibly good business person, business lady. You know,
I remember when I lived in Constantia, and of all the places, I mean, even during times that were economically more viable than they are now, and people had more money to spend, you would see Tasha's. There would be a queue at Tasha's, and I could never understand it. But I've never eaten there, but I suppose the menu must speak for itself.
Exactly. I mean, she had a very good menu and very good standard of food.
Yes.
And I think she wants to get that back. You know what I mean? I think maybe under a place like Famous Brands, and I'm not attacking them. You know, when you've got a conglomerate or a organization that's got so many different brands, and that you can't maintain the same kind of control that she did over it, you know, and that's probably why.
I like talking about food, and I do with Wayne McCurry. What do you eat when you go to Tasha's? You're probably one of these people that sits down and has the same thing, like an Eggs Benedict or whatever it is.
It's strange. I'm trying to think what I do eat there. But it's normally kind of snacky food in that. But their good what's the names are very good. Their steaks and various other food that they make at that level. But I love to have the I can't pronounce it, the Mexican flatbreads, and I love all kinds of whatever they do produce. I love their chips as well. So yeah. Listen, am I mad, or are there people in North Carolina? Has he got crowds there, or is that visual? Is that virtual?
He hasn't got. There was a side show, but I'm watching CNN. I can't. I'm looking at Belarus. I'm looking at Minsk. You're talking about the Republican National Convention
virtually. Yeah, sorry. I think that might have been last year, because I just got a fright when I see. It says 4-day RNC held, which is Republican Party, held virtually. Delegates meet in North Carolina. So I don't think they're going to have people there. I think that might have been last year's.
I would have thought so. But we'll talk about Trump later on. Anyway, lots of other things to talk about now, because we've got Aspen Pharmacare up 10% after a cautionary announcement. Cash Build up 1.7%. CAP, which is Nick Kunz's recent favorite, up 12% on the day. City Lodge down 8% after the results of their rights offer. Tonga Hewlett down 4 2/3. Let's start with Aspen. Why is it up 10%? What's happening there?
It's obviously they're going to sell another crown jewel. You know, and I think they're just bringing down their debt. And, you know, that's been their burden. And I think the fact that they're actually bringing it down is, the market's responding very positively. It just gives them just more ability to get out of this.
Yes.
So I think that's why.
Bringing down their debt, in other words.
I don't know their – you know, it's a worry. They got themselves into a debt burden and that. And when you have to sell out your businesses, that's not a sign of strength. It's a sign of weakness.
Yeah.
You know, and you've got to hope now that once they've got their debt lower, that whatever remains, gives them the right kind of revenue and earnings, you know, which are mainly those two big drug deals that they did, I think, for thrombosis and for anesthesiologists. anaesthetist. What's it? You get the words right.
No.
Okay. You know,
not
what I
with
mean?
Not with those funny
the one that puts
syllables. Sorry.
That puts people to sleep when they have operations. The other four of thrombosis drugs. And I'll think, yeah,
I've got other things anyway. That put me to sleep without having to have anaesthetics. David?
So it's a good sign for me. Remember, this is a 440 share.
Yeah.
It's trading at 140. So it gives an idea. This is I don't want to put it in the same category as Sasol, but they're trying their best to get it down, and then they're going to have to concentrate on those operations.
That was well. I mean, that thing went to the 50s, 60s, I think it was at some stage. Anyway, let's have a look now at City Lodge, which has fallen 8% today because of the rights issue. Where did people not take up their rights? Why is it down so much? That's quite a big move.
I don't know. I find it very peculiar. The movements lately have been very odd. You know, a good friend of ours mentioned that Joffe was in the hunt. You know, that was a rumor. And I'm saying these are rumors, which I don't think there's any truth around it. I saw the shares go up 16% one day. And subsequent to that, they've unwound it.
Yes.
I think at these levels, it's an absolute throwaway, and it's a tragedy. It's not even a throwaway. It's a tragedy that a business of this magnitude or a business of this quality, you know, finds itself caught in where it is at the moment, in a lockdown where there are no people coming, no business travelers as well. And they've also got to rethink their whole brand, you know, because people are not going to travel like they used to. So it's – and they're, you know, they're well represented in areas where business people gather. This is not a holiday place. This is not for holiday people. This is not on the beach. You know, it's not anywhere like that. So I just find it just so sad that they are there. I think their market cap, I'm going to just get it for you. But I think
But while you're doing that, David, while you're looking it up, you were the one that said to me that you used to go down and see a client of yours, a long-standing wealthy client of yours on the west coast of the Western Cape.
Yes.
And used to go and see him maybe two or three times a year. And
now you've got four times a year.
Exactly. And now it may be once a year, or it may be not at all, and you do it via Zoom. And you would probably have been the classic City Lodge client.
Yep.
I mean, I know you'd probably be quite flash and go to the Cape Sun or something like that, but you would – If you replicate your experience and the way that you've changed your business dealings, imagine what that means to City Lodge. It's not difficult to work out. Even I can understand it.
No. Absolutely right. So we would go there four times a year. What I used to do is wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning, quarter to four, in fact, to get a 6 o'clock flight,
right.
Fly down there, 8:30, drive up to the West Coast, which is another hour. And then, you know, meet for an hour, hour and a half, maybe a little more, and then reverse the whole process and, you know, come back again.
Yes.
So not only was it an expense, and I've got to tell you the other thing is this is strange, and you can criticize me as well. Because we were driving up there, you can't – if you sit in the back of the plane, you don't get biscuits. I mean, you don't get breakfast. You get on that plane at 6 o'clock and they throw you a wafer and they throw you a glass bottle or something. I don't know what you get. And I was always found that I was dying. So I said, please just do me a favor to the firm. Just send me business class. I can sit in the front and at least have, you know, one of those, just have a decent breakfast so that I'm well prepared. So I would, you know, we would fly four times a year, you know, but I mean, to go down to Durban or anything, or even Cape Town and business, just such a ridiculous expense. But this is one that I did do. And the other reason I did business class is that I wanted to be in the front of the plane. So as we landed, I could rush out.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't have to wait for the plane to unload, rush out to get the car to go up north. So work that out. That's four business class tickets from our point of view. And I've saved 4 days of work.
No, I understand.
Exactly.
I would do exactly the same, especially if I was in your position. David, Blue Label Telecoms came out with an updated trading statement. It came out at 16.08. The share price is up 8%. You haven't looked at it, but again, I noticed that Cell C is closing down 128 stores today. Did you notice that? And that was an announcement that came out, which is, I suppose, is just...
The Levy boys have got to rebuild the business. I mean, they wrote off, but you know that farce in trying to buy Cell C together with the people who backed them. I think Net One Yeah. They wrote off $5.5 billion. I mean, in 2 years or whatever it was just a crazy amount. He has a share that was trading at, I don't know, 26 Rand, 16, whatever it is. He's just hovering at the bottom. Are they going to be able to build this business again? I can't see it. Do you know what I mean? I can't. It's a nice little cash business to have on the side. You know, if you're running this, I don't know where they're going to make money or growth into the future, you know, at a time where people don't want to pay for the product anymore. So, you know, I'm looking at mobile businesses. It has to remake itself. So probably they'll start to try and recover some of their, you know, their former glory and generate a little bit of cash and that. But I don't see much upside for them. And it's just the business. It's business, and also, you know, the fact that they're actually still there after writing off $5 billion is still a mystery to me. But you know, that's how things operate.
One day you're going to sit down. Yeah. One day you're going to sit down. We'll have an educational. You're going to tell me, because I don't understand. You'll give me the theory of writing off, write downs, impairments, and all that sort of thing, because you're an accountant and you understand these things. Because people say, I read these results and they say, well, we wrote off this, or we impaired $5 billion here, or $3 billion there. And I think, what does that mean? You mean it's worth nothing anymore? You've lost all this money. I don't understand.
You've lost shareholders' money.
You've lost everyone's money that had faith in you.
Yeah.
But I need to know the tax implications, why they do it, and why they can't just come out and say, we lost this money because we're idiots.
Well, you know what, I tried to explain it the other day from our business. You know, I said, can you imagine you're my client and I buy you Sasol at 600? Okay, so what is it? I buy you 100 shares at 600 Rand. Okay. Like, they now 130 or 140, and I said, sorry Lindsay, got that one wrong. I'm taking your cost. So in future, when you see your portfolio, your new cost is going to be 140. I messed up. You know what I mean? We got this wrong for that. And I say, so I'm just writing it off. And now, from now on, you're going to judge me at 140. And you say, okay, that's fine.
I wouldn't say that's fine.
No, of course you wouldn't.
Come around and duff you up.
But what do we do? What do we do as shareholders? We say, no, that's fine. And you know what happens? Accounting allows you to do it. So there's no reminder of what you lost. The accounts are square. You know? So for me, it's staggering. And there are every set of results that is coming through at the moment has impairments where the people in charge, whether it's COVID, whether it's lockdown, that doesn't matter. Shareholders' money has been written off. And therefore, whether it's wittingly or unwittingly, it's been written off.
Yes.
And what happens is from now on, analysts, you know, who are at all the big houses, at all the big investment managers, they're going to look. They're not going to look at the past. They're going to look in the future and say, okay, this is where we are now. Well, how wonderful these chaps have done. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because the accounts are clean.
So you should be ashamed of yourselves, you bean counters. You really should. And
absolutely.
Also,
I agree with you.
Someone else who should be ashamed of himself, and actually not so much him because he's obviously mentally ill, but the people that vote for him is Donald Trump. Kellyanne Conway, his favorite spokeswoman and a staunch supporter, has suddenly resigned. And that's the worst possible time. I mean, there must be something behind this. The RNC, the Republican National Convention, is starting right now, and she's resigned. She's announced her resignation. What message does that send? Steve Bannon, one of the biggest, again, supporters, is going to jail. It's the 10th person that has been arrested in the Trump circle, which is extraordinary. And number three, the sister of Trump has, in secretly recorded messages, called him you-know-what. This is her brother, for goodness sake. I mean, she may say this around the Trump table on a Sunday lunch or at Thanksgiving or something, but no, she's broadcast this, or it's been broadcast around the world. What on earth is going on? And yet the evangelists and the Christian base of Trump will say nothing. They won't say, well, what would Jesus do? I don't want to get religious here. I'm not a person of faith. But if you're a Christian, and you look at what Mr. Trump has done, then I don't know how you sleep at night, because that's not the values that you've been brought up with.
I know. That's how we believe and that's how we feel. But he has his base. You know, it's the same thing. If you bring it home to South Africa,
yes,
you've got the ace. You know, you've got the ace base. You've got the Zuma base and the Magashula base. Sorry, that's ace. And you've got all these. And you say, but how can they vote? I mean, it's so obvious what they're doing. And it's the same thing. They've got supporters there who, whatever reason, ACE represents what they believe in. You know, and you can't bring him to justice. So it's staggering. But for a country like America, I think a man like Trump who's taken them down to the lowest common denominator. Mm. It's mad that he has even a slight chance of a second term.
And he has a chance.
You've got to look at the Republic thing. You've got to look at the senators, and you've got to look at the people who come to support him as well. You know, you've got to, that's where the questions, in
they're
my
complicit.
View, got to be asked.
They're complicit because they are so cowardly.
Right. Mm. Absolutely right. There are a few now that are starting to, turn around because they want re-election, and they can read, the mood of the electorate. So there are people, but whether this translates into Biden winning, I don't know. I'm so nervous.
If he was young and he was vibrant and he was eloquent and he could actually string a sentence together without having a teleprompter in front of him, then it would be an open and shut case. But because Mr. Biden is slightly older than Mr. Trump and he's made a few gaffes, and he's maybe not there for two terms, I fear for a very close run election.
I know,
don't you?
I know. I do as well. This is not an open and shut case. I'm very, very nervous.
I'm very nervous.
You mentioned anybody who's come out there, whether it's John Bolton, anybody who has ever worked for him behind the scenes has come out and says, man's not competent.
No.
He's not fit to run. He's not fit to run.
Anyway, there's a film coming out actually next week called Unfit. It's coming out. I think it's coming out on Netflix. Yeah. I don't know. But anyway, it's called Unfit, and apparently it's very, very good. And it exposes him. And it'll come out, unfortunately, not before the national convention, which has just started in Washington, funnily enough. But anyway, David, we have to wrap it up now. But we have to mention, of course, the UEFA Champions League final last night. To Bayern Munich is a phenomenal story. They sacked their manager. Yeah. They were fourth in the league in November. And there's a chap called Flick, Herr Flick. He took over in November, took them from fourth to the top of the Bundesliga. They won the league. They won the German Cup. And now they've won the European Cup. What a and he's a quiet man as well. And he's very dignified. The Germans are amazing. And one of your players, Arsenal players, was a key part of that team. He's now worth 100 million.
I know. And Wenger let him go. And I think regrettably let him go. Whether he would never have stayed at Arsenal. He would never have.
No.
He wouldn't have stayed there. But Herr Flick, don't you remember those Hello,
Hello.
Did you ever watch us?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, Herr Flick.
Exactly. That's what I thought. But he's quiet, He's not like Mourinho or Klopp. No. He hasn't got that sort of charisma, but he sits down. He's
soccer.
Lovely.
I love both sides. I think they played attacking, fast soccer. But what impressed me on both sides was the defense.
Yes,
superb defense. Both sides very, very well organized. Even for PSG, which plays, I would say, in an inferior league, although they'd get very cross if you said that. Great teams and superb skills. Under great pressure.
Yeah.
It's not the Barcelona quiet, soft stuff. This was fast and pacey. Mm. And,
It was a terrific.
I don't know, very good.
Yeah. I mean, people say, it wasn't a five-goal thriller, but I enjoyed it. I thought it was a terrific game. I enjoyed it every second of it.
I know. Mm.
David, thank you very much for your time. We'll speak to you again tomorrow evening on the 5 o'clock shadow with Nick Kunze from Sundown Private Wealth. That was David Shapiro, and that was Shapiro Will. David is from Sasfin Securities. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position,
or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.